Welcome to the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind, their families, and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do. Join us now as we get to know people like us who are working towards their own success. Here is your host, Chris Peterson.
My guest today is Dave Furukawa. He is a retired physician assistant. He has practiced internal medicine and ophthalmology, and he is now the chief experience officer and co-founder of Foresight Augmented Reality, a company that is developing products to make the world more accessible to the visually impaired. Dave, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So I know that you are a guide dog user now and therefore visually impaired, but you are a retired physician's assistant. And so my first question is, were you visually impaired when you were practicing?
Absolutely. The story is that I was working in internal medicine for many years, and I went to my eye doctor for a routine appointment. And the doctor said, Dave, we're looking for a PA to do our health assessments for people having eye surgery. And I looked at the guy like he had four eyes because I was like, well, you know, I'm visually impaired, right? And he goes, absolutely. He goes, it's the perfect scenario because you understand what patients are going through, you know, literally and figuratively, and yet you understand what we're trying to say as well. So it actually worked out well. I practiced in ophthalmology at the Emory Eye Center for 17 years before my eyesight finally made me hang up my stethoscope.
Were you going through medical school with a visual impairment?
Yes. Actually, all of my life's courses are stories, but basically I was going to medical school and I kept bumping into those yellow wet floor signs in the hospital. And the nurses were like, Dave, you need to go get your eyes checked. Something's not right. And I remember I went to the eye doctor and, you know, he said, you're in med school, right? And I said, absolutely. And he said, well, I've got good news and I've got bad news. And I said, well, what's the bad news? And he goes, well, you're going to go blind. And he said, well, what's the good news? He goes, well, you can become a psychiatrist. And I went, what? Not that there's anything wrong with psychiatry or mental health, mind you. But so I had a friend that was actually in PA school at the same time. And he recommended that I look at the PA track because I could get out of school in 2 years instead of eight. So I did a lot of soul searching and made up my mind and made the change. And it turned out to be a godsend because I was able to change services several times throughout my career. Whereas if I'd been a medical doctor, I wouldn't have been able to do that.
So vision loss was a gradual thing for you then?
Yes, I have retinitis pigmentosa. So gradual, slow, degenerative retinal disease.
And would you say that is what drove you towards ophthalmology?
No, it was like I mentioned, it was just kind of a happenstance that I went to the eye doctor and he said, hey, we're looking for somebody. And I was kind of at that point in my career that I wanted to do something new. And, you know, I didn't know that much about eye disease, but in the span of 17 years, I have become a pseudo expert, I suppose.
Probably more than most of us. Yeah. So what happened next?
Well, one of the great things that I found working in ophthalmology with vision loss, because, you know, as you know, probably most of my patients had far better vision than I did, particularly towards the end of my career. But I found that the support system was very beneficial for myself, probably as much as it probably was for the patients, because I was able to channel people's emotions and then empathize, but also understand that losing your eyesight is not the end of the world. And, you know, there are other avenues and, of course, adaptive aids. You know, obviously, like I used a cane for a long time before I ended up getting a dog, but having a guide dog is certainly one of the big blessings in my life. So,
how did you come to have a guide dog?
Well, I've had pet dogs for years. And as my eyesight was getting worse, my cane travel started to slow down and my wife got pregnant. And I knew once the baby came, I wouldn't be able to use her as a sighted guide as well. So I said, now is the time to stretch my independence wings and look towards getting a guide dog. But at the time I had an older pet and I told him his name was TJ, said, I'm not going to get a guide dog till you go on. So I waited for another couple of years. And when he finally passed away and my son was born, I said it was time. So I ended up getting one, and it's changed my life dramatically for the good.
This was still during your medical career though, yes?
Yes, absolutely. It was actually a really great icebreaker when I had patients come into my office and they would see the crate in the back corner. They'd say, is that a dog in there? And I say, absolutely. It's my guide dog. And they said, are you blind? And I'm like, well, no, I can still see. I'm visually impaired, but I can see you perfectly fine. But the dog helps me get from point A to point B. And obviously walking around in the hospital with my white lab coat definitely probably got a lot of looks, you know, because they saw in my lab coat my name and then ophthalmology, and they went, is that guy doing eye surgery? So it added to decreasing the stress in a situation where a person was approaching eye surgery, which of course is very, very threatening and scary if you've never had it done before. So
what was the reaction from some of your colleagues about you having a visual impairment and a guide dog that makes a visual impairment pretty obvious?
Most of my colleagues and eye doctors that I worked with thought it was very novel at the time. And then once they grew to realize my competency and what value I gave to the group, then I think they thought that was a magical team that allowed me to act both as counselor, act as intermediary between the doctor and the patient. And in the same token, I was able to provide a lot of resources to low vision support groups and that type. So it ended up being a very, very good kind of symbiotic relationship, I think.
How about your patients? How did they react?
I'll tell you one quick funny story. I was at a embassy dinner one time for the Japanese consulate, and this woman comes up to me and she goes, David, why have you got that stick? And I said, because I'm visually impaired. And she goes, no, you're not. I said, yes, I am. And she goes, you didn't have that stick when you saw me as a patient, you know, 2 years ago when I had eye surgery. And I said, well, I had the stick. You just didn't know I had the stick. And it was at that point that I realized that I needed to be more upfront about telling people that I was visually impaired when they first saw me instead of trying to disguise it or hide it.
Did you have an inclination to try and disguise it or hide it, or was that unintentional?
I think initially it was probably more unintentional. As my eyesight started to get worse and, you know, you start getting worried about first impressions, you get worried about what people's attitudes are, then you kind of start to try to cover things up if you can. But, you know, I was lucky in that I had a lot of other friends with visual impairments, and I saw them going through similar types of scenarios. So I kind of came to the realization that, you know, hiding things is never healthy. It's better to be upfront and just let people know right off the bat. And that did work to my benefit, because then once they realized that, and I also had a visual problem, you know, if I was reaching over to get my otoscope or something, one of my tools, and I would swipe around, they'd notice that, oh, you know, he really can't see that well, even though I would eventually find what I was looking for and was able to complete my assessment. So I think they felt a little bit of comfort in it as well, I hope.
Did you ever run across any other blind or visually impaired medical professionals during your career?
The only time I ever ran into someone was a blind doctor in psychiatry, which is kind of ironic because that was the running joke that the ophthalmologist had told me when I first was diagnosed. But since I've retired, I have met numerous people with visual impairments in varying different specialties relating from like physical therapy to hematology, oncology, which is cancer and blood disorders. One was in gastroenterology, which is stomach disorders. So, you know, it's basically things where you don't really need fine, detailed vision, but you still have at least some vision, with the exception of that psychiatrist who was totally blind.
I see. So do you think there would be challenges for a blind person wanting to go through medical school or PA school at this point?
Yes, a lot of them would be self-imposed, but in certain instances, as long as special accommodations and adaptive aids could be utilized, in most cases, I think someone who probably had some vision would be able to potentially go through with no problem at all. But, you know, it's really more a case of how ambitious or how determined the person is. You know, you can, if you put your mind to it, you can figure out a way to do just about anything. Now, obviously, being a brain surgeon wouldn't necessarily be very practical, but if you're more realistic in your expectations, you know, there's plenty of blind lawyers, there's plenty of blind engineers. So it's all a matter of just how you go about following your path.
Did you ever feel limited or maybe not qualified to be doing what you were doing?
You know, when you first start practicing medicine, you always kind of feel like, gosh, I don't know enough. You know, I don't know what I'm doing. But because my vision loss was so gradual, I built up an experience base so that as my vision declined, I did not feel as though I was incompetent or not, you know, able to fulfill the skills necessary. And, you know, every time I would go up for an annual review, you know, the doctor would say, you're doing a great job, et cetera, et cetera. So, but, you know, human nature is such that you always pick at yourself and you're like, well, could I have done that better? You know, what if I had better vision? Could I have seen that or not? But, you know, again, it's attitude, right?
I certainly think so. So at what point did you then decide that it was time to retire?
I used a CCTV to enlarge the charts and look at all of the lab reports, x-ray reports, things of that type nature. And one day, one morning, I guess, I went to work and I was having a really difficult time reading my CCTV, even with increased magnification. And, you know, at first I thought, well, maybe I'm just tired, you know, so went on, did something else and then came back and it was the same. So I went home and I started trying to use my CCTV at home and I was having the same problems. So I guess the realization hit me that the, as I call functional vision in my good eye had declined significantly to the point where reading was now becoming very, very difficult. And that was at the point when I said, you know, it's really not worth the stress and, you know, having to limit what I could have done. So I said, it's just time just to retire. And at the time I had a four-year-old son. So I said, you know, it's just time to become a house dad.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 48.
I think there are many people that wish they could retire at age 48.
Well, let me tell you, retirement has its perks and it has its downsides, which, you know, they always say when you retire, you work more than you did when you were working because there's so much more that needs to be done. And that's so very true. But I actually pivoted because of a tragic event where I am now a partner in a company that provides accessibility for the world using smart technology. So I'm actually back in the workforce again.
Before we pivot to that, did you feel prepared to retire or was that something that kind of came as a shock to you?
It was very traumatic. I'm the type of person that's always wanting to be on the go, want to do stuff. I want to help people. And it was very traumatic to have to hang up my career, my stethoscope. I didn't have the network of seeing patients. So for many months after I retired, it was a tough time, you know, kind of one of those rock bottoms where you're like, woe is me, why me, what am I going to do, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I know all of us go through all of those, what is it, the six stages of grief. Obviously anger and, you know, the depression and bargaining, and then you finally get to acceptance. But I went through a lot of that after I retired. So it was eye-opening, no pun intended.
So tell me about your time as a house dad and how that brought you towards co-founding a company.
My wife is a real estate broker. And so she was always working and we had our son, he was in daycare. And I said, all right, well, I'm going to retire so I can take over the daily routine of keeping the house clean. You know, I'm a very good floor cleaner and pot scrubber. In fact, I'm kind of anal retentive when it comes to stuff like that. But, you know, as far as like dusting, I'm not very good at for obvious reasons. But, you know, I found the routine marginal. I wouldn't say that I loved it. I give kudos to those homemakers that do it regularly. And, you know, it's a very underappreciated type of job or profession, if you will. But, you know, I certainly enjoyed the time I spent with my son. I only was, quote unquote, retired for about 2 years because a good friend of mine who's an engineer, he and I founded a company called Foresight Augmented Reality. And actually, it was a legacy to the sacrifice of my first guide dog, Simon, who sacrificed his life to save my then four-year-old son from a car that ran a stop sign. The car ran a stop sign, hit me, it hit Simon, and was about to hit my son. And the dog jumped up and pushed my son out of the way and saved his life. So it was, you know, one of those pivotal moments that while I was recuperating in the hospital, I had a fractured elbow, fractured knee, and a fractured foot and a concussion. My friend came and said, Dave, we got to figure out a way that you can get around safely, but have descriptive information so you feel comfortable. And that's how we came up with the idea of our company, FAR, which we utilize things like GPS, Bluetooth beacons, and our smartphone app, FAR Vision Pro, which provides basically a voice to the physical world. So it's been very rewarding. Obviously, me not being a businessman, I've had to learn a lot in the business side of things, but it's been a great adventure. And I'm very happy and lucky to have a second chance at a new career. So
we'll continue our interview in a moment, but first,
hosting a podcast is a lot of work. You got to interview people, take phone calls, write show notes, take some of the work off of your plate, and give it to Superblink. We'll make your podcast sound super and get it done in a blink. That's why we're called superblink.org.
Do you have a short success story you want to share on the air? Leave us a message at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find us at pennyforward.com/podcast.
Tell me about your title. You're the Chief Experience Officer. What does that involve?
Well, the Chief Experience Officer for our company is kind of a catch-all title in that I'm the face and the voice of the company, i.e., I'm the one who deals with public relations, with marketing. I'm the one who does customer service. I'm the one who goes around to conferences and speaks about accessibility and safety. I'm the one who goes to companies and organizations and basically talks about how inclusivity, accessibility is important for not just the disabled, but for everyone. Particularly with pandemics and disasters like hurricanes that we have here on the East Coast. These types of things are areas that in a lot of cases, the general public don't think about unless there's a problem. But yet those of us that need additional information or additional accommodation, you know, we have to actually ask for it. So to provide a more inclusive and accessible community, I'm the one that goes out and tries to show people what experiences will benefit not only them, but their employees and constituents.
Tell me about the products that you make and how you use them.
Sure. Well, you know, when we first formed the company, I was the one that provided all the input on what I thought that the visually impaired community needed. And I was the company guinea pig. I try all of the new features that are added to the app. Basically, in a nutshell, we provide a virtual or augmented reality marquee or sign, like a bulletin board, that enables the user to benefit from augmented descriptive information. So say, for instance, like with COVID right now, if you went to a office or store, you might not know what their hours are. because it might be restricted hours. You might not know if there's guidelines that they have, you know, what type of social distancing precautions do they have, et cetera, or in the case of a disaster, where are hurricane relief centers, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just the tip of the iceberg as far as information that we can project out to people using Bluetooth technology, because most of the navigation apps and things of that type nature rely on GPS, which requires a cellular or a Wi-Fi connection. And in emergency situations, you might not have access to Wi-Fi or to a cellular connection, and Wi-Fi still works without any of that. So that's one of the big advantages that we have, in that you can utilize this without any sort of data connection.
What are some of the things that you had to learn on the business side of things in order to make this work?
Wow. Being a medical professional, it was really an eye-opener as far as jumping right into the business world. And I had really no experience whatsoever on the marketing end of it or the accounting aspects of it. So it was definitely a on-the-job training type of process. But fortunately, there are a lot of resources out there to get you up to speed. And a lot of my friends jumped in and helped as far as assisting not only myself, but my other business partner and a couple of our other employees. So
what are some of the accessibility challenges of running a business?
Interestingly, probably one of the biggest things is transportation, getting to and from the office. As we all know, you're reliant on public transportation if you have it, or you're reliant on someone to take you and bring you home. So one of the areas that our company is actually working really hard with is the autonomous vehicle field. And we were one of 10 national semifinalists from the Department of Transportation to receive a grant to make autonomous vehicles accessible for the disabled. So that's one area I would say is right up in front in terms of one of the obstacles or one of the areas that I found particularly rather challenging. But, you know, also when you're visually impaired or blind, sometimes, you know, obviously just traversing through the halls of your office building can be problematic. You know, like say, for instance, how do you know which bathroom is which unless somebody tells you, right? Which one is the male and which one is the female bathroom? Now, obviously, once you learn that, then it's not an issue. But, you know, it's little things that the average person doesn't even consider that we go through becomes challenging and can be somewhat stressful, because then you have to ask. A lot of us want to be as independent as we can. And it's sometimes very, it's embarrassing to have to ask somebody, you mind taking me to the restroom, or you mind taking me to the lunchroom or whatnot. So
where can people learn more about your company?
Well, you can go to our website, www.foresightar.com. And that's for Foresight. So that's foresight, like as in seeing before you get to where you're going, but foresightar.com. And we're on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. So.
And what advice would you have for other people with RP who are maybe experiencing vision loss very, very gradually, and that they kind of have that hanging over their head, you know, it's a long time from now, and aren't quite sure of what lies ahead for them in the future?
That's a great question, because I've had, you know, obviously 30 years to ponder on that. You know, I've met friends that lost their eyesight from traumatic accidents, and, you know, in a blink of an eye, they went totally blind, and, you know, they had to deal with the loss and were able to get on with their lives. And then, of course, people like me with RP who deal with the gradual, you know, deterioration of your vision. I found that, you know, you hit plateaus where you lose something, and then you basically adjust and you live comfortably for a while, and then you lose something else and you have to deal with it again. So it is more difficult, I think, having a slow progressive loss of vision. But I would say that if you look at things from an optimist perspective, in other words, is the glass half full or is it half empty? You know, you can always find a positive perspective in just about anything. You can turn a negative into a positive. And, you know, obviously people always ask me, if you could have your eyesight restored, would you do that? And I'm like, well, your first gut instinct would say absolutely. But the quote unquote vision that I've developed as a result of my vision loss has given me a keener insight on my perspectives of life, so that I really don't know if I'd want to have my vision restored, because I see things so much clearer than I did when I could see well, if that makes any sense.
It certainly does to me. For people who are younger and maybe just starting out, they're looking at possibly extra work to prove themselves, maybe some discrimination, maybe some accessibility challenges on the way, a lot of unknowns. Is it all worth it?
Without a doubt. Obviously, the biggest pitfall that any of us go through, and that's with any type of challenge, whether it's being visually impaired, hearing impaired, autistic, dyslexic, you name it. If you try to go through these types of challenges by yourself, that's where it becomes the biggest barrier. Whereas if you band together and you have a great support network and you immerse yourself with others that are going through the same type issues or have already gone through these issues, and they can provide you with insight, then that's the biggest strength that you can utilize to overcome the challenges that you face.
Well, I think that's really great advice. And I'm sure that there's going to be tons of people that listen to this that are going to appreciate it. Dave, I've really enjoyed it. We're out of time. But thanks for being here. It's been really, really interesting.
Oh, no, thank you. You know, I'm always glad to speak to people about, you know, whether it's guide dog usage, whether it's, you know, about losing your eyesight, you name it. I'm always available.
Hope you have enjoyed this week's episode and we'll tune in again next time. But before you go, I want to tell you a little bit about ABLE accounts. An ABLE account is an investment account available to people who are blind and disabled and became blind or disabled before age 26. It allows you to put away money and invest it in the stock and bond markets so that you can grow wealth even while you are collecting Social Security benefits. It's a great option for parents finding a way to build wealth for their kids while they're growing up. And money that is saved in an ABLE account can be used for expenses such as housing, transportation, education, assistive technology, and other qualifying expenses, all without impacting your Social Security benefits. Whether you are on Social Security now, might be in the future, or have been in the past, if you became blind before age 26, investigate whether an ABLE account might be a good option for you.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind, their families, and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do. Until next time, from all of us in the Penny Forward community, thanks for listening.